go on the Friday edition, Mr. Irrelevant. I'm Alex Strofe with you from the Gruber Law Offices, One Call That's All Studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Everybody's off today. Will Summers is here. That's it.
No grinders on this program. No, it's embarrassing.
No grinders at all. But good to be with you. We are with you earlier today. If you're watching with us live on YouTube at ESPN Milwaukee, at ESPN Madison, it is noon rather than 12:30 because we're going for 2 hours today. Got a call from upstairs. They said, "Hey Strofe, hey Will, you guys are not working enough already as it is. We want you to work more."
They said, "You guys are no longer the relievers. We're moving you out of the bullpen. Get on the rubber.
You're starting. So here we are. We have a big show for you today. So I just want to get a tweet out, and then which I probably should have done beforehand, but I'm doing it late.
I wish someone would have told you to do that. Sorry, I'm not a boss.
No,
I shouldn't be bossing you around.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, tweet is out. Okay, so we are with you until right around 2 o'clock. We'll probably end a couple minutes earlier than 2 o'clock today, but lots to react to, obviously, with Chris McIntosh, with Luke Fickell, and everything going on there. So we will get to some Chris McIntosh and Luke Fickell reaction after McIntosh announces through Pete Thamel of ESPN yesterday that, Luke Fickell's going to be back in 2026. If you've been paying attention, if you have had your eye on the Wisconsin football program at all over this season, which has been a tumultuous one and a really disappointing one if you're a Badgers fan, because it's year three of Fickell, right? Like, at this point, you expect to see some results, and the results are you're at rock bottom. Like, you are at Don Morton era level with Wisconsin football. It's about as it's been in my life because I was born, in the 90s, right? That's when Barry Alvarez turned this thing around. And Barry's first year in the early 1990s was not good. But then it was all up from there. And with Luke Fickell, the first year was not good. And then the second year was not good. And now the third year has been even worse. And obviously, we knew preseason how hard their schedule was, how hard it was going to be to find wins. But they've barely competed. And their last game, obviously coming off the bye week, their last game in Oregon was a good sign, I guess. It's a 21-7 loss to one of the best teams in the country, but you're playing in the rain. I mean, you can make excuses either way, right? Still shouldn't give you a lot of faith. So after the loss to Maryland, Chris McIntosh spoke to a few reporters and wanted to clarify that he has faith in Luke Fickell and he has faith in the direction of this program. And then a couple of weeks ago, he sends out a letter saying that there will be more resources put towards football, Wisconsin football. There will be more money. There will be more resources. And now yesterday, McIntosh just flat out tells Pete Thamel of ESPN and flat out comes out and says, Luke Fickell will be the coach in 2026. And he does what you can't really splice it any other way than a fluff piece with Jesse Temple of Badger Connect, stating his vision for the future with Luke Fickell at the helm and some of the things he expects in 2026, given that, well, he announced Luke Fickell would be back in 2026. And there is a 7-word phrase that McIntosh slipped into this fluff piece, this fluff interview with Jesse Temple, who is an outstanding reporter. Jesse Temple is now works for Badger Connect after spending a long time with The Athletic. He's an outstanding reporter and terrific interviewer, and this is worth your time watching. So when I am taking a knock on this fluff piece, I am not knocking Jesse Temple. I am knocking Chris McIntosh because I think he didn't realize in the situation. There's a pre-recorded interview done in the comfort of the University of Wisconsin halls where he doesn't realize there's going to be a visceral reaction, especially when you bring back a coach who has done nothing but fail and fall short of expectations, and you say these 7 words to Jesse Temple that made the rounds on the internet yesterday.
What does success look like to you? How will you determine whether this is a path that is working?
Yeah, I think, the priority for me is to continue to grow the program in a way that puts us in a position to achieve those expectations. That comes in many forms. It's not limited to wins and losses.
All right. So those last 7 words again, Will.
It's not limited to wins and losses.
Does count as a word? That might be 8 words.
No, that's a, what's the word? It's not a word. It's a paraphrase, a phrase.
Yeah.
That's not a word.
No, it's not a word. So
it's a sound.
So one more
time.
It's
not an onomatopoeia.
One more time. The seven words from Wisconsin Athletic Director Chris McIntosh on how we will evaluate 2026.
It's not limited to wins and losses.
So I think he's been I will say this. I will say this in defense of Chris McIntosh. He has been getting killed over this. Has been getting killed over those seven words.
I mean, what did you expect to happen when you said that?
I don't think he meant it the way it's being perceived. I don't. Because wins and losses don't matter this year or last year or the year prior. They matter a hell of a lot more next year. Because here's the thing, right? We've all had a relationship or a friendship or even at work, right? When you do something wrong and you ask somebody, hey, are you upset or are you mad at me? Right? Let's use this for an example, okay? I maybe misspoke towards my girlfriend. Like Chris McIntosh just did. It's not all about wins and losses. Maybe I said something I shouldn't have said to my girlfriend. And I say, sorry, honey, are you mad? And she looks at me with a deadpan face and says, well, I'm not mad. I don't believe you, okay? If you have to clarify, I'm not mad, I don't believe you. We've used the term, this is like the Titanic. Ben Brust on KBN has often said, this is the Titanic and they've hit the iceberg. But let's use it in this sense, right? If you're on a boat and the captain of the boat says, oh, the boat's not sinking. Those are words that never need to be said. If you are coming out as the athletic director of Wisconsin with four games, that's a quarter of the season, a third of the season. A third of the season is left. And if you are the athletic director of Wisconsin, you're coming out unprompted, right? It's not like Pete Thamel called him and said, hey, Chris, just wondering. Just wondering, is Luke Fickell going to be back in 20? He didn't call him and ask him that. Chris McIntosh decided to reach out to Pete Thamel of ESPN, the premier college football insider, and say, hey, yeah, he'll be back in 2026. Just, you know, can you please let everybody know he'll be back in 26? You are signaling that things are awful. It's just like saying, I'm not mad, or the boat's not sinking, or Luke Fickell will be back as the head coach in 2026. What you are doing is signaling to every single person, alumni, former players, current players, fans, family members of the current players. Shoot, you are signaling to Luke Fickell's family that this is not good enough. That is the admission you are making as the athletic director. Right? Nobody's more comfortable now. And we will get to his reasoning for doing this before their fourth to final game of the season. With a third of the season still remaining, we will get to his reasoning as Chris McIntosh joined Wilde and Tausch this morning on ESPN Wisconsin. But you doing this is signaling to everybody that this is about as bad as it gets. And I actually do want to hear from Chris McIntosh on this because I want to say what I want to say, and I will say it. But I think it's important to have the context of what Chris McIntosh said. The very first question Jason Wilde asked him this morning on Wilde and Tausch, which I think was the question we were all wondering from this release yesterday, was, why now? Why are you doing this now? And here is Chris McIntosh's response to Jason Wilde.
You know, where this came from in my mind was, you know, we need to create clarity around the direction and the future of our program. You know, clearly there have been many, many conversations throughout the season between Luke and I, between the team and I, obviously with Luke. And there's a point given, you know, the speculation and just the noise around the program about what might be, in which I felt it was necessary just to create clarity.
All right,
and
stop
I
think it right there.
I owe
stop
that
right there.
To...
Create clarity. And then he goes on to say, I owe it to the players, I owe it to the coaches, the yada, 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 I owe it to the recruits. Name one other university that's done this year. Name one. Name one university that has completely underperformed expectations in 3 years under a head coach, that the athletic director views it necessary to create clarity with a third of the season remaining, that he will be the head coach the following year. I ask you to name one because you can't. This doesn't happen. This has only made it messier. And I think that's the part where maybe Chris McIntosh views it as a good thing for recruits. But here's the thing about 17 and 18-year-old kids, and even guys they're going to go after in the portal. They're on the internet. They know what the score of your games are. They know what your fans are saying and thinking about the state of this program. They know all this. So you coming out and saying he will be the head coach of 2026, I don't view that as clarity. I view that as an admission of things being awful. I view that as you acknowledging that, oh my God, this is way worse than we ever anticipated. This is way worse than we expected. This is an admission by Chris McIntosh that this hasn't worked out at all. This marriage that dates back to November of 2022, when Fickell was introduced as the head coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, right? He's had the 23 season, the 24 season, now the 25 season. In November of 22, when I was at that press conference, when Luke Fickell was introduced as the head coach in Madison, and they are talking about championships and getting to the college football playoff and getting Wisconsin back to being one of the premier college football programs. That's what the expectation was. And less than, or just about 3 years later, you have Chris McIntosh on Badger Connect with Jesse Temple saying these seven words after 3 years prior when he hired Luke Fickell, talking about championships and chasing championships, Big Ten championships, college football playoff, and then 3 years later, moving the goalpost to this.
It's not limited to wins and losses.
That is the ultimate backtrack. And that is the ultimate goalpost move. And that's what makes this situation entirely unacceptable. I do not have a position on whether or not Luke Fickell should remain as the head coach in 2026. Right? Our job is to have opinions. I really don't have an opinion. And here's why. I think if you fire Luke Fickell, you set yourself back monetarily because it's a massive buyout. I think you set yourself back because most of these guys that do believe, like we heard from Cooper Catalano, for example, the freshman linebacker. He was on the jump around yesterday with Pablo Iglesias and Jim Rutledge on ESPN Madison. Cooper Catalano said, everybody in that locker room believes in Luke Fickell. Okay, that's great, right? I'm not in the locker room. I don't know whether or not I believe in Luke Fickell. But what I do know is if I'm a high school recruit, right? Let's say I'm a four-star prospect from, let's just say Milwaukee, right? That's where I'm sitting. Hypothetical. And I am being recruited by the University of Wisconsin. Why would this give me clarity? Why would this make me feel better? Why would the athletic director sticking his neck out for the head coach with four games remaining in the season that has already been terrifically underwhelming? Why would this give me clarity and faith and expectations of when I arrive, or in theory could arrive on campus as a four-star recruit, that we're going to all of a sudden win games? Like, I view this as the messiest state. Like, what do they always say? Like, the couples that post each other on Instagram a lot are usually the most unhappy couple.
Yeah, it's like the honeymoon phase. If you have to make yourself believe that you're in the honeymoon phase, you're not in the honeymoon phase, right, or in a good state in your relationship.
And look, again, I'm not sitting here, and I'm not going to be the one that says Luke Fickell's an awful coach. I think his track record at Wisconsin is horrible. I mean, it's as bad as it gets in the Big Ten. For as exciting of a hire as that was in November of 2022, it has been awful results-wise. Awful. And so, I'm not going to stick my neck out and say, well, he should be the head coach in 2026. I don't know. I think it would set you back. But this is inept leadership, in my opinion. And I like Chris McIntosh. And overall, I thought his run as athletic director was pretty good up until the last few months. But if you need to, not once, not twice, but three times in the same football season, go out of your way to defend the head coach. It's like a couple on Instagram that post each other too much. It tells me that this relationship is not working and you're just trying to sell us something you don't actually believe in. And that's where I'm at today with Chris McIntosh. We'll hear more from him until 2 o'clock today. By the way, Riley Yao, Jay Kokoreski, both going to join us in the 1 o'clock hour to break this down.
Here's the other thing about the wins and losses and trying to sell people on the process. Like you said, we're in year two, right? Mm-hmm. Year two of Luke Fickell.
Year three.
Exactly. There's never been a time in college football where it is easier to instantly become a contender. Look at Indiana. I know they're the prime example for everybody. But even schools like USF, Memphis, they're building these college football playoff contenders in 1 to 2 years. So for us to sit back and listen to Chris McIntosh say, oh, it's not about wins and losses right now. It's about developing this team and this process of bringing in these new recruits. You know, like he's in year three, you know, his recruiting classes are just about to start priming. We shouldn't have to wait for that. There, mm-hmm. with the transfer portal and the way NIL is and the fact that you are a Power 5 team, the success should be instant if you really want it to be.
Yeah.
I just think it's preposterous for him to say that wins and losses should not be the forefront of a Power 5 football team that has historically found sustained success in the Big Ten, and not just the Big Ten, the entire NCAA as a whole, as a national powerhouse.
Bingo. Bingo.
That's disrespectful to every fan, every player, everybody associated with the program to say, you know what, we're not going to focus on being good right now. We can't do it right now. We're just going to focus on progressing. That's unfair. Like if you told me this in a year or in a time when NIL and all this money didn't exist, okay, that's fine. You know, the main way that you are gaining these new players is through high schools, and Luke Fickell, you know, he might have missed on a recruiting class, and now his guys that he hit on are going to come up and develop and get into those key spots. But there's no time other than the present where you should be able to build an instant contender if you are taking yourself seriously.
Yeah, that's the difference, and I see a comment on Madison, which, again, I'm not sitting here and advocating for the firing of Luke Fickell. I've never really been that guy. I'm not going to pretend to be that guy. My issue is more with McIntosh and the reason that this release happened and the weird PR stunt that this has been all season, despite the inexcusable results that Wisconsin has faced, right? It's not like it's just they're getting pounded by Alabama and Indiana, which will happen in 2 weeks, and Michigan, et cetera, right? And Ohio State. It's not just that. It's, let's not forget how bad they looked against Middle Tennessee State.
They're surrendering to these big teams. They're not even trying to beat them.
Yeah, the Oregon game, they scored last, so I guess you could take a little bit of faith in that. They were at 21-0 and lost 21-7.
Tausch said it on Willie and Tausch. He said that touchdown did feel pretty good. So.
I bet. It was their first touchdown in how long?
I was looking today. They have not had a 100-yard passer in the past three games. They have not had somebody throw 90-plus yards in the past three games.
That's bad.
That's despicable.
The position's been in flux. Every year Fickell's been here. I'm not defending him. I'm just saying.
But in a blowout to not get some pity yards to get up to 100, like that is embarrassing.
So I see this comment, and I do want to address it. So Barry Alvarez arrived at Wisconsin as the head coach in 1990. 1-10 his first year. They were very bad. 5-6, 5-6. His following 2 years, because they only played 11 games back then. Luke Fickell ain't going to win 5 games in year three. Luke Fickell ain't going to win 3 games in year three.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's the difference. At least there was a little bit of progression with Barry Alvarez. And then in year four, they went 10-1-1 with a tie in there, but he won 10 games. Year four was the explosive year for Barry Alvarez, and it was pretty much all uphill from there, except with exception to 1995 when they went 4-5-2. They were 8-3-1 in 94, 4-5-2 in 95, 8-5, 8-5, 11-1, 10-2, 9-4, 5-7 in 2001, 8-6, 7-6, 9-3, 10-3. So Barry turned it around and sustained success.
How many years, too?
It was year four when they really turned it
around. But that's also in an age where they won recruiting and everything else was vastly different to where it is now.
So different. So different.
I wouldn't even compare it to 10 years ago. It was so different than how it is now.
Yeah. So I find myself surprised, irritated, annoyed by the fact this was even need to be done.
I mean, you said it best. These other schools that are floundering with their coaches, they never did this because you know what they did? They got rid of the coach.
Bingo.
In the year where there has been arguably the most firing and buyouts in college football ever, no school has gotten to this point that the Wisconsin Badgers have. And guess what? Those schools, come here, come close, they were all better than Wisconsin.
Yeah.
What does that say about them?
Correct. And Dr. Denver Dan, just kind of repeating what you just said, Will, and that is, with NIL, can you really compare the Fickell era to the Barry era? That's college versus pro. And he is correct, right? These are different eras. This is different times. When you are paying for guys to play like you are in Madison now and in the NCAA now, it's a completely different era to 1990 and 1991 and 1992 when Barry Alvarez was taking over and changing what Wisconsin football was and what it was known as, which was, I mean, generally coming out of the Don Morton era, bad football school. That's not the case when Luke Fickell took over. There was a couple bad years under Paul Christ, and he wasn't evolving with the age of NIL and transfer portal, etc. So that's why they made the change to a guy who took a non-Power 5 school to a college football playoff and who was the hottest candidate on the block when he was hired in Wisconsin. And none of that's happened, right? You could tell me, well, he's had really good recruiting classes. Has he? I mean, that's why stars kind of suck to begin with, but you're getting these 5- and 4- and 3-star recruits, and all of a sudden you have the 19th best recruiting class in the country, and it's led to, well, a 2-10 season, very likely. I don't think they're winning another game. Maybe they will. I think it's unlikely. So no, I don't think you can compare the Fickell and Barry eras, and I think these two are very different individuals. Again, I am not saying Luke Fickell is necessarily a bad football coach, okay? Not what I'm saying. But the product we have seen from him in this era of college athletics is not acceptable at a Big Ten school. You have gone from a team that is competing for Big Ten championships year over year to a team that is at the basement of the Big Ten. And that's bad.
I don't think it's acceptable in any sport. With the resume that Wisconsin has in this specific sport, I wouldn't accept this in any collegiate athletic sport. How the decline that they've had. And, I mean, we talked about it, too, the progression. McIntosh preaches how, you know, they're not worried about wins and losses. We're going to keep progressing. And they've had these good recruiting classes, and what has come from it? Like,
no.
I haven't heard of any, like, homegrown Wisconsin recruit being an impact player for them this year. Has there? I mean, Tretch Kekahuna, I think he's homegrown. He's been solid for them. But it's like, no one's standing out, jumping off the page at me.
Well, that's the hard part with being an awful football team is nobody's really.
And with they have had a lot of injuries, I will say that.
But I mean, you probably have guys if you want to reach, right? Like Catalano's a name I just mentioned, and defensively he's been good for them. Yeah, I don't know. I'm gonna have to do some more research and get back to you on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll see.
It's also crazy the standard that was set in Paul Chris' year. Like what? How many wins did he have the year he got fired? Was it 7 or 8?
No, they finished with 6. And then I think
halfway through the year, right? It was after they played Illinois and lost at home.
Yeah, they lost at home to Illinois. He was fired, and that was in early October. And then Leonard took over, and they got the 6 wins. Ultimately, a 7th, I think.
Yeah,
because I think they won that bowl game that Fickell was not technically coaching, but kind of coaching.
He was there.
But, I mean, that was just an ugly game anyway. I think they played Oklahoma State. And
Mike Gundy?
Neither of them had any of their actual starters there. They were both playing backup quarterbacks, and it was all messy. So, I don't know. Is Mason Reiger from Wisconsin? No, he's from Illinois.
He's from Louisville.
Illinois.
Or I think he went to Louisville and then Illinois, maybe. Yeah, I think he definitely went to Louisville.
Hoffman Estates, Illinois, okay. More, Matt.
Yes.
Where's Hoffman Estates? Do you know? You're in Illinois.
They were in our conference for high school in the Northwest suburbs. But
did you play Mason Reiger?
I didn't play football. I guess our years would have lined up that we would have played him, but I was talking more homegrown, like not transfers, like guys that they recruited.
Oh, sure.
And I know he's a transfer from Louisville. Sebastian Cheeks, who's been good for them, is a transfer from North Carolina on the defensive side of the ball. All their quarterbacks transfers. Guess the offensive line.
Well, that's where that used to be their bread and butter.
Right.
So who knows? All right. We will get back to the Badgers around 1 o'clock. As I mentioned, Riley Yauch from ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day, ESPN Madison, the jump around. He is going to join us at 1 o'clock from 1 until 1:30 or so. Jake Kokorowski of Badger Observer, longtime beat reporter on this team, is going to join us. Our buddy Jake Coco, going to join us right around 1:35. Because I want to get his perspective on some of this stuff, also some of the claims that have been made by, well, whether it's Brad Nortman or Tim Brando or Chris McIntosh. I've just got some things I need to get past a guy that's very much in the weeds and in the know, in Jake Kokorowski. So he's going to join us to wrap up the show around 1:30. So we are going to go back to Packers and business as normal until 1 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, we're going to go all Badgers for an hour. All right. So real quick, I do want to talk about this Monday Night Football game. Packers-Eagles coming up Monday. We will have our show Monday previewing the game beginning at 12:30, as we always do. I'll be at the Tundra Trio in Green Bay just outside of Lambeau to preview that one with you. And then we'll do Green Bay Game Day, as we always do, just on a Monday this week. It starts at 4 o'clock on Monday. And we'll watch the game, and we'll be back with you Wednesday to react to it. But it's been a week, right? We've had all week to kind of get our feelings out about this Green Bay Packers team. And now we've got to put our sights as fans on the Eagles on Monday. And the thing that I'm still struggling with is I'm having a really hard time figuring out exactly what the Green Bay Packers are. Right? I think they're a good team, but sometimes they're not a very good team. And sometimes they look like they are an elite offense, and sometimes they look like an offense that's doing too much, and the play caller, and Matt LaFleur, doesn't have the greatest idea of what he wants this team to be. That's the part I struggle with. So I don't really know what to expect on Monday. They're 2.5-point favorites, and knowing Matt LaFleur and knowing the Green Bay Packers, this will be a game they find a way to win. They'll beat the reigning Super Bowl champions. But then again, they could lose by 20, and that could give us a better idea of exactly what to expect. So I don't know. Tucker Kraft loss is going to be a big one. So whenever I'm feeling down in the dumps, I like calling people who are eternal optimists like me. And, you know, like if you're an eternal optimist, I think you keep in a good track of like good energy people. Like, Will, you're a good energy guy.
I'd say so. Yeah.
I like keeping around for that. Josh, on the other hand, not always a great energy guy.
This Monday, he was not.
Hunter, on the other hand, right? Like I call him the doomsday fan. Not always a great energy guy. You are a good energy guy, which is why I'm actually happy it's just me and you today.
On a day where we need good energy.
It's just you and me.
The right crew.
So, but also, like, I peg in my weird ADHD brain, I think of, like, who are good energy people? Who can make me feel better? Who's going to make me laugh and make me smile? One of those guys, 10-year NFL wide receiver, now works for ESPN Radio, Freddie and Harry, ESPN Radio, 2 to 6 Central. He's funny. He's weird. He's goofy. He's got a weird perspective on things, good perspective on things. He's a 10-year NFL vet for Atlanta and Tennessee. So I called Harry Douglas. I'm like, dude, make me feel better about the Packers. So Harry Douglas is going to join us now as we try to dive into and diagnose what exactly the Packers are and how to move forward with the Green Bay Packers. Harry Douglas on Mr. Irrelevant right now. Friday edition, Mr. Irrelevant. Alex Stroph with you from the Gruber Law Offices. One Call That Sell studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Excited to be joined now by the legend from Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio. Harry Douglas is with me. And Harry, I wanted to call you on this Friday because it's been a weird week in Wisconsin. And you're upbeat, you're happy, you're comedic, and I'm feeling really down and low about my Packers. So I wanted to call you, hoping you could make me feel better about this team. Do you think you can maybe try to help me?
Oh, that's going to be tough, but I'm going to try. I'm going to try my best.
I appreciate the attempt at the very least. So a loss to the Browns, a loss to the Panthers, and a tie to the Cowboys so far this season for the 5-2-1 Packers, Harry. What do you make of this team through 8 games? Because I'm struggling to figure out what their identity is, what they're capable of. And I don't know if you have a whole lot of a better idea, but again, I'm calling you to try to help me.
Yeah, so I would use the phrase Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It's the best way to describe the Green Bay Packers. There are times, I remember on Thursday Night Football versus the Washington Commanders, they looked excellent. Week 1 versus the Detroit Lions across the board, they were excellent. But then you have those lapses versus teams like the Cleveland Browns, who we know aren't a good, who are not a good football team in the league right now. You have a boneheaded interception by Jordan Love late in that ball game. The offensive line in that game did not play as well as they should have. And I think consistently in their own direction, this offensive line, they have not lived up to the hype. Those guys need to be better, number one, protecting Jordan Love, but also, you know, creating those lanes and avenues for Josh Jacobs to be able to run through and have these explosive runs that we know he's capable of having on a consistent basis. And I would also say you look at this past weekend versus the Carolina Panthers, and, you know, you get into the red zone 5 times, but you're only – able to get into the end zone once. So you're 1-for-5 in the red zone. That's a recipe for disaster. That's definitely a way to lose a football game. But not only that, you look at, you know, on the defensive side, the inability to stop the run game versus Rico Dotto and the Carolina Panthers. And they did exactly what they wanted to do coming in as a football team. The Carolina Panthers, that is, in Lambeau Field, rushing for 163 yards. And you know, it was about tackling. It was about getting the running back down on the ground, and they just couldn't do it. So you need that consistency. And I know consistency has been the word for Jordan Love the last few years, but I think for the Green Bay Packers as a team, as a whole, they need to be more consistent. We know they have players on defense, but what good is it to have them on paper if they aren't performing on a consistent basis the way we know they're supposed to? Then we know on the offensive side that you have wide receivers galore. Mm-hmm. But what good is it going to be talking about those guys if they can't remain healthy for a full season? And week in and week out, you got to worry about if this guy's going to be playing, if that guy's going to be playing. And then for Jordan Love, hey, we need to see you step up and be worth that $55 million a year. Now, there are moments where you see that kind of quarterback. Mm-hmm. But then there are also moments when you scratch your head and say, now, why would he make that mistake or make that throw again? You want to go in hindsight? Look at this weekend versus the Carolina Panthers. That boneheaded interception late.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And that's the hard part of evaluating exactly what he is. Because one week we're talking about, oh my goodness, he could be in the MVP conversation if he keeps this up after a really solid second half against Pittsburgh. And then you use the term boneheaded mistakes, which is not the first time we've seen that this season from a guy like Jordan Love. Where do you view him in terms of the NFL, Harry? Do you view him as like a top 10, top 15 guy, or is it still kind of the jury's out on him because it's been a roller coaster ride through his first 2.5 years as a starter?
You know what? Like right now, like the season is still going on, and you're what, 8-9 games in?
Yeah.
I'm going to give him the rest of the year. The thing about Jordan Love is like we know – from the last 2 years that from the middle of the season to playoff football, like he's been excellent outside of the playoff game versus the Philadelphia Eagles. But, you know, he's been excellent. Can you do that for 17 games or can you do it for 15 games? We don't want to see it for 7 to 9 games. Can you be the quarterback that can build every single week and be the reason why this organization is taking the next step?
Yeah,
that's the thing with Jordan Love.
It's like maybe not with Love, but my relationship with the Packers overall, as a Green Bay native, I grew up in Green Bay. It's like a toxic relationship, man. The highs are high, the lows are low, and this has been one of those weeks where I'm like, damn, should I really stay in this relationship?
And look, when you look at their next matchup, right? Monday Night Football versus the Philadelphia Eagles. Now, I know the Philadelphia Eagles, they've had their own issues this season, but what have they done the last two games? Offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo said, we got to switch some things up. Jalen Hurts has been under center, the play action game. They've thrown the football across the middle of the football field, which is something they don't normally do. They're finding ways to be better. They're not just sitting on, hey, this is who we are. If things aren't going right and you're not having the right production within your organization, well, that's one thing I can applaud Nick Sirianni for. You know, going to the drawing board, seeing what needs to be fixed, and then offensive coordinator Kevin Petullo has done a great job the last 2 weeks. The Philadelphia Eagles' last ball game that they played and won, Jalen Hurts was under center more so in that game than he has been any other game this season. So that lets me know they're not just ignoring things that need to get fixed. They're finding solutions to the problem, and they're actually getting it done.
Yeah, and hopefully that's something Green Bay can figure out. I don't love the term must win, Harry Douglas. I don't love it, especially at this time of the year. But in terms of, hey, prove to me you belong with the cream of the crop in the NFC, do you view Monday against Philly as a must win for Green Bay to prove they belong in that Super Bowl conversation?
Yeah, I agree. Must win, not in the sense that, hey, the Packers are not going to make the playoffs if they lose the game, but must win just showing that you belong with the upper echelon. Now, their only quality win, I would say, well, I guess you can say the Pittsburgh Steelers because Pittsburgh is leading the AFC North. But the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Detroit Lions, those are the only quality wins I feel like they've had so far this season. But we knew this was a thing last year, right? When you looked at the quality opponents that they played last season, it's not like they beat a lot of them. You know, they beat up on some of the bad teams, and a lot of those losses came in the division, in the NFC North as a whole. So, you know, can you show on Monday Night Football when everyone is watching and we know the team that you're playing won the Super Bowl last year, their general manager, Howie Roseman, just made some trades for three defensive players. A.J. Brown is coming back. Can you get a win in front of everyone and showing that, hey, we are a force to be reckoned with in the NFC, and we're not out of contention for this number one seed. We're still locked in stone.
You've got Ravens-Vikings on ESPN Radio. That's the game you'll be on the call for this week, and another team in the NFC that I think has, or in the NFC North, that has a lot of questions around them. How do you evaluate this division, Harry? Obviously, the Lions maybe lost a little bit of a step, but to me, they still look like the most consistent team in this division. I don't know what to make of J.J. McCarthy, and I certainly don't know what to make of Ben Johnson, the Chicago Bears, but they're at 5-3 on the year. How do you view this division, which in terms of wins was the best in football a year ago?
Yeah, so we talked about Green Bay already. I'm going to go to Detroit next. You know, Detroit, I thought they were playing really good football up until last week versus the Minnesota Vikings. Now, Minnesota did a great job up versus them. One of the recipes to beat a Detroit Lions team led by Jared Goff is to, number one, make him very uncomfortable in the pocket. That's exactly what Minnesota did, having six sacks and, you know, throwing different looks at him. Another way is to minimize the run game. Detroit only rushed for 65 yards versus the Minnesota Vikings. So Brian Flores, as a defensive coordinator, did a phenomenal job. And I felt like J.J. McCarthy as a quarterback, and a lot of people, they were basically giving up on him a little bit. And I told people, just relax a little bit, because their two offensive tackles had been out. Their starting center was out. They got both of their offensive tackles back. Now, they still allowed five sacks, but J.J. McCarthy made the plays when necessary. They were able to run the football. Their very first two possessions, Aaron Jones has two explosive runs. What better way to jump off your first two possessions than to have your running back with two explosive runs? But J.J. made the throws necessary. It came down to a 3rd and 5, right? And he had to hit Naylor for a first down. Perfect ball placement, back shoulder it. They get the football. They keep the football, game's over. So, you know, I think it's going to be a little bit what we've seen from J.J. McCarthy at Michigan. Play really good defense, run the football effectively. J.J., we need you to make throws when we ask you to make them. And then I'll go to Chicago. Yeah. You know, they got a big win this weekend.
They did.
They got a big win versus the Cincinnati Bengals. And we all know Cincinnati's defense is god-awful. But I think this division is going to be a dogfight all the way down to the end. But with Green Bay losing and then Minnesota beating Detroit, the door is still ajar for Minnesota. A lot of people had given up on them because they had four losses. But now, with two teams losing the end of the division, the door's still ajar for them to come back and try to win it.
Yeah, Packers in first place at 5-2-1. Detroit right behind them at 5-3. Just behind them, or really with them, is Chicago at 5-3, and Minnesota only a game back at 4-4. All these teams 500 or better through at least 8 games on the season. All right, Harry Douglas, last thing
and
for
and
you.
And guess what?
You go ahead. Yeah.
And guess what? Here's the thing about Minnesota. They still play Green Bay twice. They still play the Chicago Bears once. And they still play Detroit once. So it's not going to be over until the pretty lady sings.
The pretty lady. I like that. The many phases of Harry Douglas. If you were wearing a mask, by the way, you do this mask bit on Freddie and Harry on ESPN Radio from 2 to 6 p.m. Central, where you wear different masks. I've seen the Hulk mask. I've seen the Anonymous mask. I think I've seen a Batman mask on you. What mask would you put on to describe the Green Bay Packers?
Do they have an incognito mask?
That's what they were this weekend.
Well, because sometimes, you know, they're incognito. You don't even know they exist.
Yeah. You're right about that. All right, last thing for you. I want to play a quick game I call For Real or Phony as we look at five teams in the NFC. I want to know if you think they're legitimate championship contenders or if maybe the record is phony at this point. Let's start with these Minnesota Vikings. 4-4, a win over the Lions over the weekend. You have them at home against the Ravens on ESPN Radio this weekend. You view them as real contenders or phonies?
Phonies. Yeah. There's still a lot more to be figured out. They have injuries they have to deal with. Aaron Jones got banged up again in this last game. So, you know, the jury's out on him if he's going to be able to be full throttle this weekend as they face the Baltimore Ravens. J.J. McCarthy had a good first game coming back. Can he continue it? Can he be consistent?
Team number two at 6-2, leading the NFC South, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Baker Mayfield. For real or phony?
I'm going for real. Even with the injuries, Baker Mayfield is such a dog deep down in his inside. You can't measure a guy's heart and his ability to will guys to get victories, and that's exactly what Baker has been able to do. They're going to get Bucky Irvin back. They're going to get Chris Godwin back. They still going to have the weaponry. I believe they're real.
Team that's won 3 in a row in impressive fashion at 6-2, the Seattle Seahawks out west. Where do you put them?
For real, in every single letter capitalized. I love what they just did at the trade deadline. They were already Super Bowl contenders, in my opinion. They went and got Rashid Shaheed, a guy who played for Clint Kubiak in New Orleans last season. In New Orleans, in the 6 games that he played, he averaged 17.5 yards per catch. Unbelievable. You have Jaxon Smith-Njigba. You have Cooper Kupp. Now you have Rashid Shaheed. You're not going to be able to double guys. And they use two tight ends very, very well. That defense is daunting. Yeah, they're for real.
That is a Sam Darnold believer, if I've ever heard one, in Harry Douglas. All right, 2 teams left. Another another team out west. And I think the answer is easy for me here, but I'm curious to see what you say. The Los Angeles Rams, Harry.
Yeah, they're for real. I actually said before the season started that the Rams are going to have the number one seed in the NFC as a conference. You look at Matthew Stafford right now, I believe it's 21 touchdowns to just 2 interceptions, playing lights-out football for the Rams. His relationship and chemistry with Puka Nacua, but also Devontae Adams. Defensively, I don't think people are talking enough about their defensive line and how much they wreak havoc. I love the Los Angeles Rams.
I bet you can't guess where I'm going with the last one. For real or phony, Harry Douglas, the Green Bay Packers.
I don't want people to get mad at me, but phony, pony, phony. I need to see more consistency. You can't have games where you're allowing the Dallas Cowboys to score 40 points and the game ends in a tie. You allow the Cleveland Browns to beat you, and then you allow the Carolina Panthers, even though I believe Carolina's a good football team, to come to your house, walk in your trap, and take over your trap. Phony for the moment.
Well, I started this conversation by saying, hey, please make me feel better. I'm ending this conversation by saying, Harry Douglas, you absolutely did not do that.
It's okay. I still love you.
I love you too, Harry Douglas. Freddie and Harry, ESPN Radio. You can hear him, Ravens at Vikings on ESPN Radio on Sunday. Harry, this was really fun. We'll do it again, my friend. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Harry Douglas on Mr. Irrelevant. Didn't make me feel a whole lot better, to put a bow on that. We'll see what happens on Monday. I don't know. Give me a week in a football. We'll come back for Irrelevant on Monday. And maybe I will feel better.
I think you just need a little breather. You need to recollect your thoughts.
It's been 5 days. That's a little bit of a breather, isn't
it? I think watching football on Sunday is going to eat you up. Yeah. You're going to want to know.
Yeah. I mean, like, look.
Were you one of the kids that could never wait to open your Christmas presents?
No. Yeah. Like, what makes you think that, Will?
You just seem like the eager, not patient type. Like, were you the one that was looking through, like, the closets and all hiding spots?
But in terms of this weekend, like, the game that Harry's calling, which is Ravens at Vikings, like, that's a game that intrigues me.
Very.
If the Ravens go out and win, it takes away a team in the NFC North, at least one game back. I mean, they're already, I think it's a game and a half, technically, with that tie back. 4-4 they are on there. They'd be 4-5 if the Ravens win on the road. I think there's some interesting things this weekend that I'm going to have my eye on. I mean, Lions Commanders isn't as sexy as it was before the season, but it's not so sexy right now. Commanders are not very good.
It's been disappointing to see their downfall.
Yeah. Rams Niners is an interesting game in the NFC. I still don't know what I think about the Seahawks. So we'll see, but
I think I'm in on the Seahawks.
There's some good games this weekend. The ultimate point I'm trying to make in terms of, like, tell me the NFC hierarchy. Tell me who's actually good and who's not.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll find out a lot. It's a learning week.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to our NFL picks, which we do every week. The loser will spend wildcard weekend at Will's apartment, which right now it is looking like who?
It is looking like it'll be Josh DiMaggio. He is in last place at 7-10-1. Myself and Hunter Vaughn tied in second to last at 8-9-1. And yours truly, Alex Strofe, 9-8-1 in first place.
It's not
place.
How yours truly works, but I appreciate it.
I tried.
Yeah. Yours effort? Truly would be you.
I'll take effort. Yeah, I'm an effort points guy.
EFFORT, effort.
There's one thing about me I don't usually get things right.
So every week we pick the Packers and the Eagles game. Should we wait until Monday to pick that?
We could.
Nah, we'll save it.
I have the picks.
I think we should put our picks in now, and I will give everybody the opportunity to change their mind on Monday.
That's fair.
All right, so we start with Josh in last place.
Josh took the Eagles, and then he also took the 49ers as his underdog. They will be at home against the LA Rams. Yeah. They're currently 5-point underdogs. A little surprising there. But I guess LA, California, Might be just a home game for the Rams, 49ers fans. I don't know how passionate they are.
Yeah.
It's an interesting one, too.
It is.
Is Brock Purdy back this week?
Maybe.
Is that a soft benching?
No.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, I understand why you would say that, but no. I think he's just got a bad turf toe injury. But no, they believe in Brock Purdy. Why wouldn't they?
Well, when's the last time he played? Week two?
But hold on. Think about a soft benching, right? Like, there's been a few in the league this year. I think J.J. McCarthy was one.
The Cardinals one started out as a soft benching.
Oh, it's...
It still is.
It still is.
It might be a hard benching.
Is he on IR now, Kyler Murray?
Yeah, he's on IR. Jacoby's been pretty good, though.
Jacoby's been good, right?
I've always said I thought he was one of the better backups in the league.
And you look in Minnesota, we thought... I mean, I still think that was a soft benching for J.J. McCarthy. Now
Carson
he's back
Wentz's,
and got a big win.
Carson Wentz's body was falling apart on the field, and they still refused to play J.J. McCarthy, who rolled his ankle.
Purdy is not a soft benching. I think they're just trying to keep him healthy enough so he can tune up for the playoff run. I mean, they're at 6-3. They're a good team. They're likely a playoff team. But it depends on what happens on Sunday, and Josh thinks it's going to be the Niners. So Eagles and Niners for Josh DiMaggio. Let's go to Hunter Vaughn.
Hunter, he went a little chalky again. I'm not going to get on him. I know he doesn't want to spend time with me, but he took the Eagles and then the Patriots, who are on the road against the Buccaneers. They are 2.5-point favorites underdogs on the spread. Sorry.
So this is why I love...
This is the game of the week, guys.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. So, I from a professional standpoint, I love when the Packers don't play on Sundays because I can actually watch the full slate.
I guess like the spotlight is on them regardless because of the expectations and the very... losses. The Packers. No matter where they play, they're going to have a spotlight.
Right.
Where like other people's teams, it's like, okay.
But I mean, specifically selfishly for me.
Yeah.
Right? Like.
Well, that's like personally for me, I don't want to watch my team play in a primetime game because it's going to be.
Yeah.
Like last night, if you're a Broncos fan, you're embarrassed.
That's Thursday night for you, though.
Yeah. You're embarrassed of how they played against the Raiders. Well, they won, but it was ugly.
Yeah. It sure was. That was a gross game. Yeah. Watched it, but it was gross.
I just saw a bunch of bad punts. There's a lot of punts and a lot of bad punts.
Yeah, 10-7 in those beautiful uniforms, though.
Gorgeous.
Broncos.
Best uniform in the NFL.
I think I agree. The only one I would put up against it. There's two I would put up against it. Philly Kelly Green.
Which they're wearing on Monday night.
Are they?
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no.
Maybe not, because the Packers would wear green at home, right?
Yeah. Well, they could wear white. Mm. I mean, I don't know.
I thought I saw they were wearing Kelly Greens.
You might be right. And then the other one is the Buccaneers Creamsicle. Those are the two I would put up against it.
Didn't they play each other in those uniforms?
Who's that? Philly?
Oh, no, it was...
Tampa?
I like the Seahawks ones. The Seahawks blue ones.
Oh, those are sick,
those
too.
Are sweet.
With the silver helmet.
Throwing it back to, like, when Brian Bosworth played.
Yeah. Good name, Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, like, Rick Meyer, their second overall
pick. Steve Largent.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
So, anyway, that's uniform talk here on Mr. Irrelevant. Who you got in second place?
I was very close to taking the Packers, but I'm going to go with the Eagles. I just feel like...
So we are unanimous on Eagles so far.
Yeah. I feel like there is still a very good chance that it goes the Packers' way just because we've always seen them step up in these games.
Yeah, that's
like,
the confusing
it makes
part.
No sense. And the reason I say that even more so this week than others is that when Matt LaFleur game plans around an injured player or when he has it in the back of his mind that he needs to make up for a missing piece in his offense, he usually steps up and rises to the occasion, which is what we've been waiting for him to do all season with these teams, playing these bad teams, is rise to the occasion. Show that you're better than them. And I feel like we said, the Packers, weirdly enough, pull these off, these upsets or these games that you think, right when you think they're out, they pull you back in. So I think it might be a little closer, but Eagles, I feel like they're about to start firing on all cylinders. It was a slow start for them last year, and then they rattled off, what was it, like 10 in a row or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like the Packers' defense... Eagles have a healthy O-line, so I don't think they're going to get much pressure. And then from there, it's pick your poison for the Eagles. Are you going to pass it against the weak secondary or just run the ball against a team that's had some trouble in the past couple weeks stopping the run? But for my underdog, I'm going to ride out a backup quarterback. Give me the Texans at home against the Jags. I think this is going to be a gross game. It's going to be so ugly. It's going to be 6-3, 12-9, something like that. But I think this Texans defense is so special. And going up against a Jags offense that's been pretty slow and, for lack of a better term, ugly the past couple weeks, I think the Texans just gut this one out with Davis Mills.
Fascinating.
Yeah. I've been kind of picking my spot here the past couple weeks. I took the Falcons last week against the Patriots.
So you like the gross games.
I love the gross games. I like trying to pick the gross games that people don't think are going to be close but are.
I took a swing last week and it worked. I picked the Steelers over the Colts.
Good pick.
Which I think I'm thinking about doing again. But since you're all on Philly, I'm going to use this as my opportunity to fade you guys.
That's fair.
I'll take Green Bay.
I was considering it that for that reason as well.
But here's the thing with you. You've got all the information when people are off. You get the information texted to you. Yes. I didn't know your picks until right now.
I still almost picked the Packers just because.
I probably would have either way, to be honest with you. I just think they're going to respond, and they're going to continue this roller coaster story of who are they? What is this team? I very well could see them play like almost a flawless game on Monday. We've been talking about how they need to play this complete 60 minutes. And we thought, okay, yeah, like Arizona's a good opportunity for that. Or Cleveland or Carolina are good opportunities for that. They haven't played that complimentary complete football game yet. Watch it be Monday night.
I have a question for you. I was thinking about this.
Yeah, hit me.
How would your perspective on the Packers change if they played that complete game? Are you all in or are you still skeptical of them reverting back to their lackluster play?
Well, hold on. I'm always all in.
I know. But so if they win, you are, I guess I asked the wrong person. You're all back in on the Super Bowl train.
No.
I don't know if you've ever gotten off of it, but.
No, I don't know that I've ever been all in on that, though. Because I still need to see something that can prove it to me. And obviously it's only November, so it's still early and there's still time to do that. And if they piece together some really consistent football the next 2 months, obviously I'll be all in. But losing Tucker Kraft hurts you so much. And I think it hurts your Super Bowl odds so much. So that's where I go, eh. But yeah, I still think they have the pieces. I still believe in Matt LaFleur. It's very different than Luke Fickell, right? I believe Matt LaFleur can figure it out and get this team back on track and get his play calling back on track. You know, there's been the conversation, oh, should he give up play calling? No, because I think that's when you admit you suck, right? That's when you admit you're replaceable.
When you admit that you need to have clarity on who's going to be the coach next year.
Exactly. If you give up play calling in the National Football League, which Kevin Stefanski has now done 2 years in a row in Cleveland, I think that just admits you're not good enough and you are replaceable. And that the entire reason Matt LaFleur is a head coach in the NFL is because of his offensive prowess and his play calling ability. So to give that up, despite it being lackluster this season, that would admit, okay, maybe the seat is warmer than we thought. So we'll see. But Monday, I will take the Packers. As for my underdog, couple different ways I want to go with this. I could troll you and pick the Giants.
There is one very gross game for a team that recently traded away a lot of assets.
Yeah, so the fired coach theory is actually where I was going to go, and I think that is where I'm going to go. Now, they didn't fire their coach in Aaron Glenn, but they traded away all their good pieces. They're at home. Boo Birds will be out. I think they respond. Give me the New York Jets to win their second game of the year.
Wow. You think Justin Fields can take on the Browns defense?
No. This is, like you just called, what is it, Texans and who? Jags?
Yeah.
6-3? This might be 3-0.
They're just going to outgross them?
Yeah. So give me the Jets over the Browns and the Packers. The Packers and the Jets. What a duo that is. All right, there's your Week 10 NFL picks. All right, we're going to do What We Missed presented by Door County Distillery. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will come back on YouTube to do our Badgers Hour with Riley and Coco. But first, got to tell you about Door County Distillery, locally produced handcrafted award-winning spirits made locally in Door County. Whiskeys, rums, brandies, vodkas, gins, and more. It's delicious. Thanksgiving is coming. You're making old fashions at Thanksgiving. Do it with the single malt whiskey and the cherry brandy from Door County Distillery. It's available statewide. Local liquor stores right near you, wherever you are. La Crosse, Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison, Stevens Point, all the in-betweens. Visit the website, DoorCountyDistillery.com. Find the retailer nearest you and elevate your holiday gatherings. Door County Distillery. All right. Josh isn't here today, so I imagine you don't have any words.
Don't have any words.
Okay, so I've used proper English today.
Yes. I have something towards the end, but I'll let you get yours out of the way first.
Yeah, so I got an email last night on my personal email, which I don't use a ton. I use it for, like, bills, right? Like,
right.
I get my, you know, credit card and rent and car payment, like, the student loans, those go to my personal email. Cell phone bill, stuff like that, right? And then like a couple of my other things, right? Like my Facebook and my Twitter and, you know, normal email stuff that I wouldn't use my work email for. And I got an email that said, I'll just read it to you. It was not something I was expecting.
Was it, you've won an iPhone, click this link to claim
it? So, yes, sort of. But not quite that bad. Facebook user privacy settlement. Notice of upcoming settlement payment. Dear Alex Strofe, your claim submitted in regards to the Facebook Incorporated Consumer Privacy User Profile litigation has been approved. Your settlement payment will be issued in the next 3 to 4 business days. The payment method you selected to receive your payment was blank, one of the apps. If you have not received this payment in 30 days, please reach out to us. For more information, visit this website. Sincerely, the law firm. So apparently, I must have at one point signed up for a class action lawsuit against Facebook that I don't remember signing up for. And maybe I shouldn't say this, but apparently I did. They have my email. They have my mobile app account. They know I use Facebook. And I thought, okay, that's got to be just spam, right? Like, you've won a free iPhone. But then I went on Facebook and I saw a guy I know post a screenshot that he made $38 in the same lawsuit. So I am going to get paid somewhere between, I would guess, $2 to $10 would be my guess.
So are you sure that this guy didn't click on the link and eventually get hacked, and then the hacker posted those screenshots?
No, because
that is a very real thing on Instagram that happens
lot. There was no link. There was nothing like that. Like, I must
you didn't click the link for more information?
I guarantee, Will, I filled this out over a year ago.
So you remember filling it out?
Vaguely. I may have been drinking. I have no idea. I have no idea when I filled this out. But I kind of vaguely remember, like, I was like, oh, this seems like something I could get a few bucks on. Like, you could buy me a beer. If they did something illegal and I utilized the platform, I might as well like get compensated for it. And clearly they did something wrong because apparently I'm getting paid.
This is a real thing. I've seen it. I know people that have done it. I know people that have gotten paid out way more than $38, like hundreds of dollars from Instagram and Twitter lawsuits. I don't really quite understand, like, is it that they got a data breach or something like that where it got?
It must have been.
I'm assuming.
So, like,
and your information
let's just say I make $20. What do I do with the $20? Do I, like, go to Pato and put it on black? Do I just keep it? And I mean, it's not like I'm going to invest $20. Does it buy me a few rounds at the bar? I feel like I should do something with this money because it's not really my money, even though it technically is my money because I filed this class action lawsuit. And also, my other question on this, see, I have a lot of questions. My other question on this is, like, is this going to be a public lawsuit? And are people going to be able to research this lawsuit? And when you look at all the names that were a part of this class action lawsuit, there's Alex Strofe and he's suing Facebook. Big Tech Strofe.
I don't think you actually sued them.
I think I was a part of suing them. That's why I'm receiving a payout.
I think you were a minor part of a bigger company suing Facebook. So I don't think that makes you completely liable for serving Facebook.
All right, hold on. I'm clicking the link they sent.
Oh, gosh. Well, I just got a notification that you posted that you...
Okay, here we go. You had to opt in, oh boy, more than a year ago. You had to opt in by July 26th of 2023.
That's when all these things came out, I remember. I remember when I was in my sophomore year of college. So that would make sense timeline-wise of when all these class action social media suits.
The final approval hearing was on September 7th of 23. So this is years old. I did this years ago. Fascinating. So I'm going to be rich now, I guess, is what we're understanding. All right.
Maybe you could donate it.
All right. What do you got before we get to the Badger Hour?
Yeah. If anyone is free tonight at 7 p.m., yes. I will be at Bullwinkle's in Brookfield. We're going to be drinking some Michelob Ultras, watching the Bucks game, spinning the wheel for prizes, and you'll have a chance to win some Ultra Club Bucks suite tickets, too, to a game late in December. So if you're not doing anything tonight, come hang out with me at Bullwinkle's. We'll drink some Michelob Ultra. We'll watch the Bucks hopefully beat the Bulls in the inaugural game of the NBA Cup this year.
Yeah. Actually, a big one. The Bulls are the best team in the NBA right now.
They just had a massive comeback against the 76ers. They're pretty good.
So we talk about your sports fandoms a lot. So you grew up in Illinois.
Yeah.
You're a White Sox fan.
Yes.
You are a Bears fan.
Yes.
Are you a Bulls fan?
Are
you not a huge NBA guy?
Ever since Derrick Rose left, I haven't really followed him. I haven't really cared for him. They're also owned, I've mentioned this before, Jerry Reinsdorf. It's hard to give any attention or money to his teams and expect to be satisfied. So I stay away from the Bulls. I don't really pay attention.
Josh Giddey's playing out of his mind.
Yeah, he's been unbelievable. Matas is good. I just like how they say see in red. Like everyone on Twitter when they win is like, just post a picture of a red block.
Love it.
This is what I'm seeing right now.
Love it.
All right. That will do it for the first hour. And technically, this will be episode, I think, 321 in the podcast feed. This will be our normal episode. We are going to take a quick break on YouTube if you're with us live. When we come back, Riley Yauch joins us to try to defend a Luke Fickell. What does that mean? We will all find out together. As for our podcast listeners, thanks for hanging out with us. We're back with you Monday beginning at 12:30 Central, ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee on YouTube. We will talk to you then on the podcast feed. And as for YouTube, stick with us. We're back with you in 2 minutes. Peace.